It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Guy Raz. And on the show today, transformation. Stories and ideas about becoming a completely different person. Later in the show, we'll hear an update from biophysicist Hugh Herr on how prosthetic technology will transform what it means to be human.
I believe in the coming decades, the synthetic limb will become part of the body and will become fully integrated within the nervous system.
Hugh Herr comes back later in the show, but first, imagine rejecting everything you were taught to believe and starting over.
When you think about your life and the arc of your life, do you think of it as a transformation, that you gave yourself a second chance to have a completely different life?
Well, that's a very difficult question.
This is Zach Ibrahim.
I guess I would use the term transformation in some way. I'm very different in my beliefs than I was when I was, even 10 years ago.
And really, you could say his transformation began more than 20 years ago, one November night in 1990. Zach Ibrahim told that story on the TED stage.
On November 5th, 1990, a man named Al-Sayed Nosair walked into a hotel in Manhattan and assassinated Rabbi Meir Kahana, the leader of the Jewish Defense League. Nosair was initially found not guilty of the murder, but while serving time on lesser charges, he and other men began planning attacks on a dozen New York City landmarks, including tunnels, synagogues, and United Nations headquarters. Thankfully, those plans were foiled by an FBI informant. Sadly, the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center was not. Nosair would eventually be convicted for his involvement in the plot. Al-Sayed Nosair is my father.
Zach Ibrahim was just 7 years old at the time. He was too young to know that his dad was a member of a jihadist cell. And eventually, he'd get life in prison. I know you were really young, but I mean, do you remember asking, where's dad?
I did. I was told that he had been injured and that he was in the hospital recuperating. And the next thing I know, we are riding in our station wagon to Rikers Island to visit him for the first time.
And Zach basically accepted what a lot of his dad's friends told him, that his father was a hero.
I had one man who, every time he saw me, he would give me a $100 bill. Apparently, for what my father had done, I actually bought my first Game Boy with a $100 bill that this guy had given me.
Today, 25 years later, Zach Ibrahim is a peace activist. But to get there would require a kind of rebirth.
It was a very slow process. It took a long time, but I had to kind of reevaluate the way I saw my father and his belief system. And so I had to basically realize that my father was an extremist and that he was willing to take innocent people's lives for his cause.
To realize that, to experience that kind of transformation, meant he had to make a choice to change.
I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1983 to him, an Egyptian engineer, and a loving American mother and grade school teacher who together tried their best to create a happy childhood for me. It wasn't until I was 7 years old that our family dynamics started to change. My father exposed me to a side of Islam that few people, including the majority of Muslims, get to see. A few months prior to his arrest, he sat me down and explained that for the past few weekends, he and some friends had been going to a shooting range on Long Island for target practice. He told me I'd be going with him the next morning. We arrived at Calverton Shooting Range, which, unbeknownst to our group, was being watched by the FBI. When it was my turn to shoot, my father helped me hold the rifle to my shoulder and explained how to aim at the target about 30 yards off. That day, the last bullet I shot hit the small orange light that sat on top of the target, and to everyone's surprise, especially mine, the entire target burst into flames. My uncle turned to the other men and in Arabic said, Ibn Abu, like father, like son. They thought they saw in me the same destruction my father was capable of. Those men would eventually be convicted of placing a van filled with 1,500 pounds of explosives into the sub-level parking lot of the World Trade Center's North Tower, causing an explosion that killed 6 people and injured over 1,000 others. These were the men I looked up to. These were the men I called Ammu, which means uncle. By the time I turned 19, I had already moved 20 times in my life. And that instability during my childhood didn't really provide an opportunity to make many friends. Being the perpetual new face in class, I was frequently the target of bullies. So for the most part, I spent my time at home, reading books and watching TV or playing video games. And growing up in a bigoted household, I wasn't prepared for the real world. I'd been raised to judge people based on arbitrary measurements like a person's race or religion.
He would just talk about Jews being evil, and I would hear similar things from, you know, from the men that were with him, gay people being evil and them wanting to turn you gay so that you would go to hell too, and just them being, you know, all around terrible people and a bad influence. And he used to say things like, a bad Muslim is better than a good non-Muslim.
Do you ever remember, sort of feeling that way too?
I mean, that's pretty much what indoctrination is. You know, you have authority figures around you telling you that the world is one way, and you don't get to see another perspective. You know, the people that I felt safe with taught me these things, and so, you know, you just kind of accepted them as fact.
One of my first experiences that challenged this way of thinking was during the 2000 presidential elections. Through a college prep program, I was able to take part in the National Youth Convention in Philadelphia. My particular group's focus was on youth violence, and having been the victim of bullying for most of my life, this was a subject in which I felt particularly passionate. The members of our group came from many different walks of life. One day toward the end of the convention, I found out that one of the kids I had befriended was Jewish. Now, it had taken several days for this detail to come to light, and I realized that there was no natural animosity between the two of us. I had never had a Jewish friend before. And frankly, I felt a sense of pride in having been able to overcome a barrier that for most of my life I had been led to believe was insurmountable. Another major turning point came when I found a summer job at Busch Gardens, an amusement park. As chance would have it, I had the opportunity to work with some of the gay performers at a show there, and soon found that many were the kindest, least judgmental people I had ever met. I don't know what it's like to be gay, but I'm well acquainted with being judged for something that's beyond my control. One day I had a conversation with my mother about how my worldview was starting to change. And she said something to me that I will hold dear to my heart for as long as I live. She looked at me with the weary eyes of someone who'd experienced enough dogmatism to last a lifetime and said, "I'm tired of hating people." In that instant, I realized how much negative energy it takes to hold that hatred inside of you.
That must have been so powerful.
You know, that was one of the most transformative times in my life. I kind of just wanted to let her know where my mind was starting to go. And when she told me, it felt like she gave me permission to go out into the world and just experience people for who they were instead of trying to fit them into some kind of, you know, category or box of some kind, just to be free in a way.
You describe what you've done as a choice, that you made a choice. You decided that you were not going to be this this person that you were kind of raised to be?
Well, I don't know that we're meant to be anything other than the sum of our experiences. And I knew that from my experience that I had, you know, from being bullied, that I didn't want to be the bully. And at the same time, I didn't want to be bullied because I knew what that felt like, the loneliness and the feelings of inadequacy and self-loathing. I knew that I didn't want to treat people like that. And if I could, I wanted to prevent others from treating people like that so that they didn't have to go through the same thing.
Zach Ibrahim is not my real name. I changed it when my family decided to end our connection with my father and start a new life. So why would I out myself and potentially put myself in danger? Well, that's simple. I do it in the hopes that perhaps someone someday who is compelled to use violence may hear my story and realize that there is a better way. That although I had been subjected to this violent, intolerant ideology, that I did not become fanaticized. Instead, I choose to use my experience to fight back against terrorism, against bigotry. I do it for the victims of terrorism and their loved ones, for the terrible pain and loss that terrorism has forced upon their lives. For the victims of terrorism, I will speak out against these senseless acts and condemn my father's actions. And with that simple fact, I stand here as proof that violence isn't inherent in one's religion or race, and the son does not have to follow the ways of his father. I am not my father. Thank you.
Zach Ibrahim, peace activist. He's the author of the newly released TED book, The Terrorist's Son, A Story of Choice. You can find out more about it and see Zach's full talk at TED.com. More stories of transformation in a moment. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.